So I was listening to one of my new favorite podcasts, NPC. I'm like number one fan over here. I'm just like freaking fanboy all the time.
Oh, thank you.
And I heard you mention that you have a ROG Ally X, which was interesting to me. So this is the, this is like the, what the Steam Deck OLED is to the Steam Deck, right? Like it's not a second Ally. It's like they improved the original Ally. I think maybe you can let me know, but they did a lot. I think they did more than Valve did. But I'm keen to know why you were interested in the Ally X, other than just you have a podcast about handheld gaming consoles.
Yeah.
And also kind of like what your impressions of it are. I have a third question that I'm going to ask real quick, just for context. Did you get the original ROG Ally? I don't remember anymore.
I did, and I sold it. Yeah.
Okay. So cool. Now we go back. Like, what made you want this, and what do you think of it?
Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack here. Initially, I thought I was not interested in the Ally X because I really, really love the Legion Go, the Lenovo Legion Go, which I've been using as sort of my main PC handheld for a few months at this point. I continue to think that in terms of LCD IPS displays, the Legion Go still has the best one. I don't know what Lenovo did to calibrate that display out of the factory. It's just, it's an incredible display, and I really love the fact that the Legion Go has a built-in kickstand and detachable controllers. And I thought, I'm not going to need the Ally X because it's got the same specs, maybe slightly more RAM, but it's the same type of RAM as the Legion Go. I don't need the Ally X. That's what I thought until like a month ago. It doesn't have detachable controllers. The display is smaller. It's like not going to be as vibrant as the Legion Go. I don't need it. The problem is that for as much as I love the Legion Go, you know, I started noticing the most basic issue of them all. It was heavy, and my wrists were hurting when I was playing games.
That's not good.
Yep. So, like, on paper, like, spec-wise and build quality-wise, I really love the thing. And I wish that I could play it all the time. Because, if it weren't for my hands and me, you know, growing older, I wouldn't need the Ally X. I would just stick with the Legion Go. I know it's bulky, but that 8.8 inches display, like, it's wild how much I love that thing. It was just a matter of, in theory, I want to keep using this device. But in practice, if I play for like, and really Dragon Quest made this happen. We're going to talk about this game later.
Okay.
But for long play sessions, like playing for, I don't know, 3 hours straight, I was feeling the pain. And that's not good. And so when I noticed that, I realized, well, now I have built this entire setup around, you know, a USB 4 eGPU and being able to have either a handheld or something that is docked at my desk. I don't want to throw this entire setup away. And so the Ally X sort of started calling to me, you know, from far away, being like, Tichy, I'm the handheld that you're looking for. And that was the idea. Like, it's the same idea as the Legion Go. It's a PC handheld, but it's slightly smaller and it's lighter. It doesn't have detachable controllers. It has a smaller display, but the key factor was it also has two USB 4 ports. And that was the thing that made it possible for me to basically just seamlessly switch from the Legion Go to the Ally X without having to change anything about my desk. I swapped one handheld for the other.
Now you're sewing on this like USB-C train. Like, it all just slots in. That's the point, right?
It just slots in. That's the point. That's the whole point of like using a standard instead of like... you asked about the original Ally. I had the original Ally. And if you wanted to expand the graphics of the original Ally, you had to use the proprietary standard. That was the XG Mobile connector. That's an ASUS-only connector, which in fact ASUS has discontinued in the Ally X because they have gone from that proprietary port to standard USB 4. And that's the beauty of just using either Thunderbolt or USB 4 to an extent, maybe even Oculink, which is now available on fewer devices, but regardless, devices from different companies and different brands. That's the beauty of an open connector instead of a proprietary one. I used to have the original Ally and an XG Mobile-based eGPU. I sold both of them. And I was also familiar with modding the Ally, which I heavily modded the original Ally that I had. I changed the thumbsticks, the buttons, I changed the SSD, I installed an additional heatsink. I did a bunch of things to the original Ally.
I remember you doing these things, but I forgot which handheld it was that you were doing them to.
And I can tell you that I also did them to the Ally X.
Okay.
And in doing that, I was able to appreciate the changes that ASUS made to the internals of this model. So maybe we can start with that, because it's a different approach than what Valve did with the Steam Deck OLED. Because the Steam Deck OLED, I mean, you look at the screen and the difference you can tell right away. It's wild how much better it looks. The Ally X, I think what I appreciate, besides the fact that it's more ergonomic, it feels so much better in the hand than the original Ally to me. Obviously, it feels so much better for prolonged sessions than the Legion Go, because it's smaller, it's more ergonomic, and it's lighter. The weight of the Legion Go really is, in my opinion, the most important factor that plays against it. It's bulky and it's heavy. Mm. The Ally X feels much better. But also,
can I ask you quickly?
Yeah, sure.
What's the weight like compared to the Steam Deck OLED?
Mm. Oh, it's still heavier than a Steam Deck OLED. Oof. And I think it's also... The thing, though, is that it's also distributed differently. So it feels heavier than a Steam Deck OLED. Well, Valve's design, from this perspective, I think is really unmatched. Because they have been able... You know how the Steam Deck is like raised in the middle? Mm-hmm. To the point where you almost don't feel the weight of the Steam Deck OLED.
They've nailed the weight distribution on that.
I agree. I think that's absolutely the case. And yeah.
In my Googling that I'm doing furiously, turns out the Steam Deck OLED is actually heavier by grammage than the ROG Ally.
There you go. Incredible. So it's all about the weight distribution.
Yeah.
It's all about that.
And the way you put your hands, right? And like how, because I, you know, the Steam Deck is a monster. It's huge, right? But that's because I think they took so much care in making sure that it feels nice and comfortable to hold, which is why it's so like chunky, I think.
I'm guessing that thermal performance had something to do with that design choice as well.
Possibly, yeah. The Ally X feels very dense. Even more so than the original Ally. And that's because they have doubled the battery capacity of the Ally X compared to the Ally. It now comes with an 80 instead of 40 watt-hour battery, which is that, as I'll explain in a minute, it's like one of the best improvements, I think, in this model. In opening up the Ally, so I was able to... One of the things that I appreciated, they have changed the SSD type that you can now slot in. So they're now using the more, what are they called? The 2280. So they were using a type of SSD before that was like really hard to find. And now they're using a more standard SSD. I think it's the same one that is used in the PS5, if I'm not mistaken. So it's like very common and very easy to buy and find on Amazon. Mm. I installed a 4 terabyte SSD instead of the Ally X. And accessing, opening up, and changing the SSD in the Ally X, like everything is much easier than before. ASUS, I think, I was reading in a bunch of interviews a while back, they have seen the fact that people were like really into modding the original ROG Ally because it was already easier. The original Ally was already easier than a Steam Deck and already easier than a Legion Go. And Asus is sort of embracing the modding the Ally X. And so accessing the SSD is easier than before. Unplugging the battery cable is easier than before. I think I have not done this, but I think that accessing the analog sticks and the buttons is also easier than the original model. So they have done a few things to improve the internals, and notably, one of the controversies. I don't know if you guys have followed, but like one of the controversies with the original Ally was the fact that Asus never publicly admitted that there was a problem with the SD card placement. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of original Ally models would just fry the SD card, because it was near to basically one of the hotter areas of the console. And that was frying the SD connector. They have changed the placement of the SD card in the Ally X sort of quietly without publicly saying, yeah, we screwed up with the original model. So that shouldn't happen anymore. In any case, it was a really fast and easy procedure. I just swapped in the 1 terabyte SSD with a 4 terabyte SSD. And the reason is that I'll talk about this on MPC, I think, in the next episode. I am dual booting the Ally X.
Okay.
I am dual booting Windows and Bazite, which
and
is
Bazite
a Linux distribution.
Steam, right?
It's SteamOS, basically. Okay. Yes. I closed it up and that was very easy. One of the nice perks of this entire process is that Asus comes with a feature that Lenovo doesn't have. It's called Asus Cloud Recovery. So if you put in a new SSD, you don't need to clone your previous drive. You don't need to do anything. You just restore Windows from the Asus Cloud.
Oh,
it's
nice.
It's slow, but very nice and very easy to do. So it took me about a couple of hours, but I didn't have to do any other work beforehand. So that being said, modding the console is easier and faster than before. Holding the console is more ergonomic than ever. The battery is just ridiculous. Right now, if what you're looking for, I think, from these kinds of PC handhelds is battery life, nothing beats the Ally X right now. It lasts forever. Even when you're using Windows, that is not as optimized or as light on resources as Linux and SteamOS. Even using Windows, battery life is incredible compared to you can play for 3-4 hours, where it basically doubled the original Ally. Then I want to talk about USB and the screen, because I think you guys also have questions about the screen.
Mm-hmm.
USB 4, I believe I described my setup in episode 2 of MPC, like that whole eGPU story and what I did. But basically, I have this USB 4. It's not Thunderbolt. It's pure USB 4 eGPU setup. I have a desktop 4090 in my office, and I have a 10-meter long USB 4 cable that allows me to play in bed with my Ally X, but all the graphical power is coming from another room in my apartment. It's coming from the office, thanks to a 10-meter long USB 4 cable. I love it. I love it so much, you have no idea.
But whenever you talk about it, I always imagine you doing, as you describe, like unfurling the cable across the hallway.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't know, you know, like you'd see in like TV shows and like movies and stuff when you're a kid, where like kind of like Peter Pan kind of style, where someone's walking down the hallway in their like black in their gown, and they have the little candle this is how I imagine you, like kind of like it's late at night and everyone's sleeping and you're just like tiptoeing down the hallway with your little fiber optic cable in your hand.
With my long cable, just also happily unfurling the cable until I reach my bed.
I'm thinking about my lawnmower, how long it takes me to unwind the cable from that.
Oh, I have a technique now. I have a technique when I need to roll it back up. I grab one end of the cable with my left hand. I roll the cable below my elbow. So I roll it one time and then I roll it in half and it becomes very compact. I've become a master at the rolling technique for long cables.
You have to be a little bit more careful with the fiber optic cables, though, right? Like, I know they've gotten better, but they're also really expensive.
They've gotten so much better.
Yeah.
And actually, like, this cable that I'm using now, the as we described on MPC, the King cable that came from China, mm-hmm. as the name of the brand, I'm not even sure it's fiber optic. I have my suspicion is that, obviously, I have not asked them. Maybe I should ask them. I think they're using some kind of copper inside, okay. because it's so much thicker. Oh, so either it's not fiber, it's there works some magic with, like, and they have maybe controllers on both ends of the cable inside the plug, and it's like fancy copper or something.
Could also just be well insulated.
Exactly. Or maybe it is fiber, but they have really insulated the fiber and they have put like multiple layers of nylon on top because it's also braided. So yeah, could be fiber, but it's like really well protected. Anyways, the LIX has two USB 4 ports and that allowed me to just keep using my setup without changing anything. One port, I can plug in USB-C headphones or a charger. And the other port, I can plug in my eGPU. It's perfect. Because this is an AMD-based handheld, it has the same Z1 Extreme system on a chip that we have seen in the previous gen Ally, that we have seen in the Legion Go. Like, it's the same chip that everybody's using. With that AMD architecture, using an NVIDIA-based eGPU is no problem. It's so much easier than using an AMD-based eGPU because then the system gets confused. With these handhelds, if you have a Z1 Extreme system on a chip and you want to use a more powerful but still AMD-based eGPU, it's a mess. Instead, if you want to use an NVIDIA-based eGPU, it's so much easier. You just install the drivers from the NVIDIA website. You run a little script to fix USB 4 support on Windows 11, and you're good to go. It took me like 10 minutes to set up my eGPU from scratch. Nothing else. And obviously, like, the performance is incredible. Mm-hmm. So I can play with my eGPU in two ways, right? I can play at my desk. And when I do, the eGPU is doing all the heavy lifting. The eGPU is powering the graphics and it's also going out to my monitor via DisplayPort. When I want to play in bed with my Ally X in my hands, I am losing some performance because I'm still using the internal display of the Ally X. But that doesn't matter because I still have a powerful enough cheap CPU and I still have a 4090. So I have so much performance headroom, it's kind of ridiculous. I was able to score. I tried there's this new game, Black Myth Wukong, that, like, it's sort of, it seems like it's becoming like the new cyberpunk in terms of like using the benchmark tool to establish a baseline for performance, because the developers are using like the latest Unreal Engine APIs. They're using like a lot of really sort of like bleeding edge Unreal stuff, and they have ray tracing. So with this setup, even if I was using the Ally's own display, so there was some performance loss. I enabled like cinematic mode, which is like max graphics and full ray tracing. And I was able to still score like 60 frames per second. Like, it's the performance headroom that I have with this eGPU over USB 4 is wild.
Do you notice any lag?
No.
Because presumably you're getting the 4090 to render the frame. Then it's got to send it over that cable.
Yeah.
And then the AMD has got to actually draw that frame rendered by the 4090 onto your screen.
That is precisely
the
case.
So I'm guessing there'll be a one frame lag.
If there is, I cannot.
It's probably imperceptible though, right? One frame's imperceptible.
I would say if you're playing the kinds of games like shooters online where like latency is absolutely paramount, you must not have latency, that you will notice. My eyes and the kinds of games that I play, I don't notice the latency. Even like when I press the buttons, like I don't notice it. If there is, I cannot see it. based on the games that I played so far. And lastly, the display. So it is not OLED.
Yeah, I'm really curious about this because you've got an 8.8-inch screen on that Legion Go.
Yeah.
And okay, you say it's heavy, but doesn't that 7-inch screen on your Ally X feel like a step down?
It does. It really does. It really does. Because when you look at the Legion Go, like you put the thing on your lap, for example, using the kickstand, my God, like that display, the way it makes the colors pop and the way it makes everything larger and more comfortable, it's ridiculous. I do miss that display. However, something that I have noticed after months of using the Legion Go and now switching to the Ally X, I noticed something that I knew was in there, but I never really paid attention to it, or like my eyes couldn't see it before. The Ally X and the Ally before, this is not a new thing, they support variable refresh rate and the Legion Go doesn't. And boy, do I notice that now. Like, I had no idea that my eyes could notice the lack of variable refresh rate in going from the Legion Go to the Ally. So variable refresh rate, it means that the display is refreshing at the same rate that the game is running. I'm simplifying things over here.
Yeah.
So when you're running a game, this is something that you especially notice when I'm not using an eGPU. I'm using just the Ally X in handheld mode. And you are unable with these handhelds to lock a game at a specific FPS. So maybe you're moving from 40 to 55, and then you're moving in between frame rates. You cannot lock a game to say always run at 50 or always run at 40 or, God forbid, always run at 60. This happens with Dragon Quest XI, and it's not even a modern game. Just it fluctuates in between frame rates. With the Legion Go, when it does that, the image displayed on screen, you can see the game sort of being choppy, you know, when it's moving between frame rates. That's because you have set the display to refresh at a specific rate, but the frame rate is always changing. The Ally and the Ally X, they have variable refresh rate. So the screen is constantly adapting to the frame rate of a game. And that, I could not believe how much smoother and more fluid the games looked on the Ally X until I started using it. And so I was very surprised by that. Mm. And yeah, I look at the screen, I'm like, man, this screen is small. But then when I play with the screen in motion, it's become something that I really appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like any of these things, right? Like the Steam Deck OLED and the Switch OLED, like I don't mind playing on those because those small screens that close to me in OLED sometimes looks better than my TV, like depending on how I'm playing.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, like the Steam Deck OLED is the colors on it are way nicer than the colors I get from my OLED TV, in my opinion. And there, you know, I'm sure there's like a bunch of considerations for why that's happening, but I just think that thing looks so good. But this isn't OLED. Like, this is just LCD, right? This is LCD.
LCD IPS, yeah. And it's not even... It's the same display tech as the Legion Go. I still think the Legion Go is calibrated better out of the factory than the Ally X. Or it's a better panel. I don't know. But it's like display tech being equal. You know, setting aside the screen size. But display tech being equal, I still think the Legion Go looks better. Just looking at the colors, looking at the quality of the image, but variable refresh rate, man, I really like it. So all this to say, there's a world in which Lenovo comes out with the Legion Go that is much lighter than before and that has variable refresh rate. If that ever happens, I'm going to switch back immediately. Because like, I really, really, like, I'm playing with the Ally X and I'm appreciating the Ally X, but I miss the Legion Go. I miss the big display. I miss the detachable controllers and I miss the kickstand. If Lenovo ever comes out with the Legion Go that is lighter than before and has variable refresh rate, I don't even care about OLED. Just those two features, I'm going to switch back immediately.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. If you had a choice between variable refresh rate and OLED, which would you take? And you've just answered that.
Yeah, yeah. I really think I couldn't, like, I was reading these comments online from people like, oh, but variable refresh rate, and like, I didn't get it. And then I started paying attention, or maybe my eyes had gotten used to like 3 months of the Legion Go. As soon as I started playing Dragon Quest on the Ally, I was like, man, this looks so much smoother than the Legion Go. And then I realized why.
What is the status of your handheld gaming PC?
Yeah.
Then, like, which, because like it sounds like you have a lot of love for both of these things. Like,
I do.
Are you using just one of them?
Yeah, yeah. So the way I look at it, I have multiple handhelds, but I have my main ones. And right now, my main ones are the Ally X, the Nintendo Switch, and the Anodin 2, as you know, for emulation. But yeah, I'm just using mainlining, so to speak, the Ally X. Yeah.
So where do you still have the Legion Go?
I still have the Legion Go and I still have the Steam Deck OLED.
Okay.
I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them. I'm probably going to sell the Legion Go first. I'm keeping the Steam Deck OLED because these Linux-based distributions based on SteamOS for PCs, they are almost like SteamOS, but not quite. And so I'm probably going to keep the Steam Deck as a backup, and I think the Legion Go is going to be the next one I'm going to sell. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, if anybody wants it, get in touch.
So the Ally X, then, it's... I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of surprised by it. Like, you seem to be so positive about it. I don't know if I was expecting that.
I really like it, especially when you are dual booting.
Just because the original Ally kind of felt like, oh, okay, Asus, you're going to do this too. You know, like, that's how it kind of felt at the time. So I'm surprised that you seem so positive on it.
It really feels like it's they have listened to a lot of feedback. They have made the thing easier to open up. They are embracing USB 4. They made it more ergonomic. The battery life was doubled. And when you consider all these things together, I don't know. It's like it's a really compelling package for a very specific type of person. And like, if I would especially say this, if you are interested in installing two operating systems on a handheld, like dual booting, like this is the device to get.
That's nice.
Because it's the easiest one to open up. It's the easiest one to install like a new SSD. And it has two USB 4 ports. So when you want to be on the Windows side and you want to use eGPUs, it's amazing because you can just fully embrace USB 4.
Well, or Xbox Cloud Gaming. Xbox Game Pass.
Yes,
like that local Game Pass games, which is something I want so desperately on a handheld.
Exactly. But when you want to use, when you are dual booting and you want to boot into SteamOS, it fully supports variable refresh rate. It fully supports pressing the power button to sleep and resume, just like a Steam Deck or a Nintendo Switch. It's really, really great. And yeah, the battery lasts forever. It's more ergonomic. I think for a 1.5 version, it's not really an Ally 2. It's a 1.5 update. I think they really nailed it. Yeah.
Why are you dual booting with Steam? Mm-hmm. This is what I'm curious about.
Yes.
Could you not just run Steam in Windows mode? Are you getting a performance benefit? Is it variable refresh rate? Is it just better OS tie-in? What are you getting with a dual boot that you wouldn't otherwise get native Windows?
Yes, that's an excellent question. I just did it for sleep and resume, which SteamOS supports. You know, you can play a game, hit the power button anytime, and it goes to sleep. And it lasts for days. You wake it up a couple of days later and it stays where you left off. Just like a Nintendo Switch. Instant sleep and resume. Like that's the thing that the Steam Deck has.
Yeah, that's killer.
Yeah, it's amazing. And Windows doesn't have it. Windows has Hibernate, but it's not really like sleep and resume, and so many games on Windows, including Dragon Quest, they hate when you hibernate your PC and then you wake it up again. So many games do not support hibernate mode on Windows. And so I realized, you know, there's times of the week when I am playing Dragon Quest for like 3 days straight, and there's other times when I want to play Dragon's Dogma or Elden Ring, and I want to switch back to Windows for my eGPU. And so having those two environments is really great right now. Ideally, I mean, in an ideal world, I mean, two scenarios could happen. SteamOS gets full support for eGPUs and non-Steam launchers. But right now, NVIDIA support in Linux-based distributions is non-existent. There are no drivers that you can install for SteamOS. Or the other scenario is Windows gets proper support for sleep and resume. And I would be shocked. Well, I would be shocked if Microsoft is not working on their own Xbox handheld. And when they do, I would be also shocked if it doesn't support sleep and resume, just like on a Nintendo Switch or a Steam Deck. But yeah, in an ideal scenario, I would just use one OS. Mm. But right now, that's what I got to do. If I want to have the best of both worlds in one machine, that's what I'm doing.
This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is a bit like not having a case for your phone. Most of the time, you'll be fine. But all it takes is that one drop in that one bad place, and you'll wish you would have spent a little bit more money on getting a case. When you connect to the internet on an unencrypted network in cafes, hotels, airports, places you can't trust because you don't control the environment, your online data could be at risk. Someone on the same network as you could gain access to your information, your passwords, your bank logins, your credit card details, because they could be looking at the traffic that's happening on the network. ExpressVPN stops this. It stops people from stealing your data. It stops people from getting your information by creating a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. But there are tons of other reasons to choose ExpressVPN over other VPNs. It's super secure. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's easy to use. You can just fire up the app and click one button to get protected. And it works on all of your devices, your phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay secure on the go. And it has been rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I love how easy it is to connect to ExpressVPN. It's just an app in the menu bar on my Mac. And when I'm traveling, especially, and I'm connected to a free Wi-Fi, I'm happy to have the free Wi-Fi, but I would also like to have the protection that will come with it. And that's where I'm able to use ExpressVPN. And I just have that peace of mind. I don't want to ever have to think about this. And ExpressVPN makes it simple and easy for me, so I never need to. Secure your online data today by going to expressvpn.com/remaster. That's expressvpn.com/remaster and get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That is expressvpn.com/remaster. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for the support of this show and all of Relay FM. Shahid, what have you been playing recently?
This is not going to surprise you. I've been playing Nova Drift. I got it the moment it came out of early access. And this is a hard game to describe because it's just so detailed. I mean, ostensibly it's a twin stick shooter, but it's twin stick shooter with ridiculous upgrade trees, ridiculous unlocks, meets Vampire Survivor, meets RPG.
Okay. Can't get my head around that one.
Yeah. Okay. It is nuts. It is absolutely nuts.
Oh, I see.
The reason I love it, if you've seen the images, you can see why I love it, right?
Yeah, I get what you're saying immediately when I see it in action. So I recommend people click the link and go to the Steam page. I have a video there and you can see it. Kind of reminds me of Geometry Wars a little bit.
Yeah, you play it for the first few seconds and you're going, what? Is this an Asteroids clone? And then you play for a few more seconds and suddenly things become a lot clearer. The weapon upgrades are nuts. The variety is nuts. The options are nuts. The depth and width of the trees available to you for your upgrade paths are nuts. It's really unusual because I've never really had anything like this in what is ostensibly a twin stick shooter. It's not strictly speaking a twin stick shooter, right? It's got a really weird control mechanism. It takes you a while to get used to because you have to use a boost button to move the ship in the direction it's facing. Okay. And then you use a left stick to change the direction it's facing and shooting as well. So it takes a little while to get the hang of that. And then it also takes a while to get the hang of using the edges of the screen like you would have done in Asteroids. Mm. But then you start to get this feeling of finesse over the controls because it isn't just endless momentum. Like in Asteroids, right? The ship just went on forever. With this, a little bit of a burst and it will move and it will quickly, with its inertia, slow down and stop. So you've got a bit more maneuverability than you did in that. And that's just a control mechanism. But it's all the other stuff. It's the shield upgrades, the weapon types, the enemy types, the waves, the power-ups. It's just nuts. There's so much to this that I don't think I'm going to exhaust it in a long time. The funny thing for me is this is actually quite hard to play on my Samsung 57-inch because you need to have your eyes on the edges of the screen all the time.
Get a neck ache. Oh my God.
Swatting out the neck over there.
It's the first time I played a game on that monitor where I had to step back so I could take in what was happening at the edges. Because, you know, you don't have time. It is a shooter in that respect. You're going to get absolutely hammered in no time at all if you take your eye off either of the edges. So to begin with, it feels like, yeah, I can do this, no problem. There's an asteroid, let's blast that. And then you get the enemies, and then you get waves of them, and then the enemies spawn other enemies, and they all have their own attack styles. And all of them are capable of going on and off the screen at the edges, like you get in Asteroids. This is why you need to have kind of almost like a relaxed Zen-style gaze so that you can take everything in. But it's got to be played on that big screen because it's just so amazing to do it on that. I tried it on the smaller screen. I played it on the Steam Deck. I say smaller screen. It's actually just squarer. So it's, how big is the telly? 65-inch telly. So technically it's bigger than this, but because it's rectangular and not just ultra super duper wide, it's much easier. And you're sitting a lot further away. And so you can take it in pretty much as if it was like a Steam Deck right in your face. So that I didn't find anywhere near as difficult as playing on the widescreen. But once you step back on the widescreen, because the image is just so good, and you also have decent sound set up, that helps as well. The sound cues help enormously. Then it just becomes like a very old school, you got to get into the alpha state to be able to play this properly. Otherwise, you're just going to get absolutely roasted. So I've been loving that. It's made by a lovely little developer developer stroke publisher who have Pixel in their title. Anything with Pixel, I'm going to enjoy.
Yep.
And they did another game recently as well. They kind of released a preview of it, which is very much based on Missile Command. And I absolutely loved that. It's very retro styled, but it's the way they use sound in a way that most retro style shooters haven't really done.
Mm.
It's really rich. It's original, but you still got that retro vibe. And it's all the different variations that they've introduced. So you don't feel like you're playing some 40-year-old game and then you just want to stop because basically you get it. Things are changing all the time. The attack patterns are really original. Enemy types are really original. AI is really original. But this one, Nova Drift, is very different to the one they released recently. I can't for the life of me remember that name, but that's still in preview. So not as important as this release. I think it's got, I'm not sure, but last I looked, it was overwhelmingly positive on Steam. But I did get it immediately the moment it was launched. Sure, and I almost never do that with a Steam game. I tend to wait a few days, see what they're like. But I like these people. I like their sensibilities. I like the way they're building games and designing them. So absolutely loving that. And I think I'll be playing that for quite a while. The other one I started playing again, because I only played it for a little bit, was Karting Superstars.
Classic.
Which... I have to say, absolutely love on my decent PC. But I noticed when I played it on the Steam Deck, because I set that up with a telly indoors. I've not done that before. I'd been playing the Steam Deck purely in handheld mode. But I decided to set it up with a dock indoors on the main telly so I could show my kids what Steam was about, because they haven't really been exposed to that. And played it on that, and it was choppy. And I was really disappointed. Mm. So I had to turn down some of the detail, and then it became smooth, and it was absolutely fine. But yeah, beautiful game. Really, really well designed. Rock hard, though. Really, really difficult. Overall, I spent less time playing in the last few weeks because I've now got some time on my hands. And do you ever remember me talking about a game I'd made that EA had signed up for publication while yes. I was still at PlayStation?
Yeah.
I never finished that game, right? Because things at PlayStation just took off. And I thought, well, I'm going to do a lot better if I serve the developer community than if I go off and be one now. Worked out great for the developers. Didn't work out so well for me, of course, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking that game is still valid. It's still a really good game. And I've been having a crack at remaking that for the modern age. So that's what I've been doing, a bit more development than I have done in a very long time. So that's been fun.
That's good.
So if you've got any word game recommendations, modern word games that you think are absolutely killer, I'd love to hear, because I want to play them all and see if I can find my niche. I think that the niche that I created back then amazingly still exists.
I think, word games, at the moment, I don't think you can beat the New York Times. Like, all of the New York Times word games are
right.
fantastic. You know, like Connections, Spelling Bee, all those kinds. You know, obviously they bought Wordle, which I think really threw this thing into high gear.
Yeah.
And also Puzmo, but I don't know if that's available.
That.
I don't know if Puzmo's available outside of the US. I'm not sure.
Oh, interesting.
That I think those two would be my recommendations. The mini crossword that the New York Times has is also like so good. So good.
Are they all web-based?
Yeah, but they have an app.
Okay.
But the app is web-based. But it works right. well, but like, you know, I play them on my iPhone on my iPad, but if you're not connected to the internet, they just die. They just die. So, you know, but they're good though. They are like genuinely good. I think like people make the joke now that the New York Times is a games company that writes articles.
Yeah.
Because it's become so popular, I think it's probably how they're making a significant amount of their money now. But yeah, then right. look at Puzmo as well. It's made by Zach Gage. Like Zach Gage
oh,
is one of the
God,
people
yeah.
behind Puzmo.
Yeah.
And like this is it's also a web-based thing. It's by author Therox and Zach Gage. And they've also done some deals with newspapers and stuff like that to put some of their games inside of newspaper apps and stuff like that.
Yeah, Zach Gage is a genius.
Yeah, it's a real classic. I have a few for you both. So,
okay.
First off is Thank Goodness You're Here.
Ah, yes. This is on my list.
Shahid, I think you'd really like this game too.
Yeah.
It's basically a comedy game. It's published by Panic. So they've kind of found another one, you know, that works for them. It's made by Cole Supper. They're from Yorkshire in the UK. And this is, yeah, I would say it's comedy, exploration, and kind of puzzle solving is what's going on here. But the art style is really good. And the comedy for a video game is really good. Like, I think video game comedy is incredibly hard to do.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think that this game does some really good stuff, especially with, like, storytelling. Like there are certain moments in the games where you keep coming back to these same people and like interacting with the environments that some people are in, and like knowing that you're coming back to that person is almost funnier than the thing that it happens, because you're kind of like terrorizing people accidentally. It's a really weird game and a really fun game. I really recommend it. You get through it in a couple of hours, maybe like 2 to 4 hours, probably, depending on how much you want to explore. But I think it's worth it. I think this is a very interesting video game. Like, I've not really played something like this before. Like, it's not doing something incredibly innovative, but just in that, like, the style of game that it is. I really hope that they find a way to bring this to the iPad one day. I think this game would work really, really well on the iPad. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. And so I recommend it for the two of you, actually.
I love the art style.
The art style is my favorite thing about the game. It looks super, super good. When I was done with that, I kind of felt like I was in a bit of a... like I didn't have anything else I wanted to play. And I wasn't particularly going to pick up this game, but it was just getting a lot of really good reviews from people who I trust, so I did. And I'm happy that I did. But then I kind of felt like, oh, I don't know what to play. So I picked up Bellatro again and was playing that for like a week. Game rules, and I just want it to be on iPhone so bad. But now I have a game that's going to tide me over for a little bit. Fields of Mystria.
What? What is this?
It's basically a new Stardew.
Okay.
So it's an early access game, but it's available on Steam in early access, and it works fantastically on the Steam Deck. You know, like, Stardew Valley is an incredible video game that began its life kind of like in taking mechanics from mostly Harvest Moon, but other games of its ilk, you know, some Animal Crossing stuff in there or whatever. Fields of Mystria kind of feels like Stardew Valley 2. It is very, very Stardew-like. It's essentially all of the mechanics of Stardew are in here, and most of them are just different in some way. The art style is incredible. It feels like a more polished version of Stardew, honestly. And one of the things that's making this game very popular with a lot of people on the internet is all of the characters that you're dealing with. They're all hot. Like, that's the idea. It's like, you know how everyone you meet in Hades?
Yes.
Right? Like, everyone in Hades is way hotter than they need to be. That's what all the characters, all the NPCs are like in Fields of Mystria. Like, in the game, there are these tiny little 16-bit characters, but when you talk to them, you know, and they lean into it too. Like, you meet this blacksmith.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you see what I mean. If you watch the video,
they are hot. Yeah,
everyone's hot. There's this, like, and you get dialogue choices, and you meet this blacksmith at one point, and he's just like jacked. And one of the options you have is, oh, look at your muscles. it's one of the options you get. But, you know, I like the mechanics of this game a lot. I like the farming stuff. I like the mining stuff that they have. Basically, it's like, if you enjoy Stardew Valley, you will like this game. I'm convinced of that. You may find it a little bit kind of, I don't know if reductive is the word, but it's very Stardew-like, basically. But I do believe that if you like Stardew Valley, you will like this game, because you can tell that these people also like Stardew Valley, and they wanted to, I think, make their own spin on it. Of like, what if we took these mechanics and then made our own game? And it has made me kind of realize that, like, there have been Animal Crossing likes, there have been Harvest Moon likes. I think this is the first Stardew like, really. I dig it. Like, there's they've put enough stuff in there. Like, the story is way better, right? There's this town called Mystria, and there's been a terrible earthquake, and it's destroyed parts of the town, and lots of people left. And so, but Mystria, the people of Mystria want to bring the town back to its former self. And so they put out a call for an adventurer to come and take over the new farm, and you do that. And so, like, a lot of the things that you're doing in the game, you're building your farm up to help build the reputation of the town, and you're also completing quests to, like, rebuild key infrastructure in the town. Like, I like that way more than Stardew's, like, main story, which is just, like, you moved to this place because your granddad died, and also there's a company called Amazon, but no, a company like Amazon called like Jojo or something like that. and they want to take over this town. Like, that story has never really hit me. I mean, the good part about Stardew is the interpersonal stories, and there's some of that here too. Like, you can really see the influence, and you can see what they've come from. And yeah, I think this is really fun, and I think for an early access game, it is incredibly polished. And they have like a good roadmap of the stuff that they want to add, and yeah, I'm digging it. I'm really digging it. If any of you listening have ever enjoyed any of these types of games, I recommend it. And this thing, it looks so good on the Steam Deck OLED. Like, they have, you know, they don't. It's clear to me that like they have like golden hours in the game where sometimes the lighting in the game is just like, Oh, it's just so good. And like, it's, the colors are fantastic, and the art style was so good, and everything looks fantastic. Yeah, this game is fun. This game is a lot of fun. I recommend it.
Nice. I've mostly been playing Dragon Quest XI.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I brought this game to the show before. So I'm about 60 hours into the game, and I don't even know that I'm halfway through the game. It's quickly becoming my favorite JRPG that I've ever played. It was released almost, I want to say 10 years ago, but it's not a recent game. It came out during the PS4 era. And it was released by Square Enix as like the definitive Dragon Quest, like the JRPG to end them all. And it tells this massively long, sprawling story of you as an orphan being raised in this small town. Turns out you are the luminary, meaning this character meant to eventually save the world, and you go through these ups and downs with the kingdom that, you know, there's a king that doesn't believe in you. It turns out the king is corrupt, and like, I don't want to spoil the story, but it's like it's a very long story, and it's a very traditional JRPG. It's like turn-based, no action-y stuff. Very different from, say, a Final Fantasy VII Remake or VII Rebirth, for that matter.
Was this originally a 3DS game?
No. So, this was originally a PS4 game.
Okay.
A 2D version came out on the 3DS. And one of the, I believe, like, the thing about Dragon Quest XI is that you can switch at any time between a 3D mode and a 2D mode that makes the game look like the old Dragon Quest games.
Looks like on 3DS you can play both of them simultaneously, which is super weird. So, like, the top screen is 3D and the bottom screen is 2D. That is wild.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, I forgot. Oh, yeah, and the graphics are obviously different on the 3DS. Yeah. I'm just playing as in 3D, and this is the sort of extended edition that I'm playing. It's the S version, meaning it's like it contains like a bunch of
definitive
extra,
I think, looking at
definitive
Wikipedia,
edition.
Like,
yeah,
so
it's like the definitive edition has upgraded graphics, some quality of life improvements, and extra cutscenes, and like extra character segments before arc 2 of the game starts. There's a major plot twist at the end of arc 1, and now I'm in the middle of arc 2. The thing about this game is that it's so cozy and chill, and at the same time challenging in places. It's the equivalent, and I believe it was advertised by Square Enix at the time, it's like the equivalent of a bedtime story that you play every night before bed for like months and months. This is exactly how the game is supposed to be played. I'm sure you can sit down with this game for like 2 weeks, play 6 hours each day, and you're going to see this game through. But the way this game is designed, you know, to be picked up in smaller sessions, in shorter sessions, and it's not an open world in the sense that it's not open world like Breath of the Wild. You have these massive areas connected with each other, but you're going to have to switch between these areas, right? It's more similar to Final Fantasy VII, I guess, remaking and rebirth in that sense. Like, it's not open, like you cannot walk from point A to point B of the map uninterrupted. there's going to be loading screens in between regions and in between areas. But those areas are massive and they are open in the sense that you can jump, you can, you know, you can explore. Enemies are visible on the world map, so there are no random encounters, thankfully. But it's still turn-based. And you have this roster of multiple characters to choose from, and especially in arc, in chapter one of the game, you can freely choose which party members to use at any point. You can swap party members at any point. And this game has so many... The thing about it is that it's a very traditional game, but it has quality of life features and smaller touches that I'm surprised the vast majority of modern games have not copied. For example, when you load the game, every time you load the game, there's a brief story recap that tells you, while the game is loading, what happened the last time you played the game. Like, what's going on? It sounds so obvious. Like, yeah, for this kind of massive JRPG that has a very dense story and a lot of characters, I could use a quick recap of what I was doing. So many games these days, if you drop off and you pick them up again after, I don't know, a month, you're like, okay, what was I doing here? Yeah. What was happening in the story? And this game does it, and it does it really well. The fact that you can change your party members, even during battle, at any point, without any like complex menus. I don't know. And there's a quality to this game that is hard to describe. It's like, it can be a challenging game. And it looks like a children's game, right? It's very colorful, very, very manga-like. I mean, obviously the art is from the late Akira Toriyama, you know, the creator of Dragon Ball, designer of all the Dragon Quest games. It looks fantastic, especially if you can play on PC. But don't be fooled, because it can be a challenging game that requires you to think and strategize. And how this game combines that element of, okay, you need to really think about your skills and your equipment and your class, and how it synergizes with other party members. How it combines that with, it's just so cozy. And, you know, the story takes a turn, but even when it does, it always stays optimistic and upbeat. And like the sort of game where you want to spend time in the world, it's like the opposite of Elden Ring in that sense. Elden Ring is a very like, it's a very enjoyable game because of other reasons, because of the mechanics and how the combat system feels. But the world of Elden Ring obviously feels very oppressive, right? It feels like it's not a welcoming place. The game doesn't want you to be there to an extent. And from this perspective, Dragon Quest XI is more like Breath of the Wild. Like, it's very welcoming to you. And as a result, you feel like, at least I feel like, I want to spend time in the world and I want to chat with my party members, which is something that I never do in JRPGs. Like, it's like the definition of a hangout game, so to speak. Like, yeah, I want to just be there, taking the vibe, taking the scenery, and just, even if I do nothing, sometimes I just pause the game and I look at it and I listen to the music, which is like, it's a very good soundtrack. Like, it just feels very good to be in this game. And yeah, I've been playing initially on the Legion Go, and then for a while on the Steam Deck OLED. Now I'm just playing on the Ally X using the SteamOS installation that I have. If you ask me at the beginning of 24, let me wrap it up this way. If you ask me at the beginning of the year, what is the JRPG that is going to define your year? I would have never guessed that instead of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which I guess so far has been my disappointment of the year, I would have never guessed that it would have been like a 10-year-old, not even a Final Fantasy game, but an almost 10-year-old Dragon Quest game. It's incredible.